The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn Beck.
It's Pat, Stu, and Jeffy for Glenn this week. We were just talking about Trump derangement syndrome. And there's a couple of terms that circulate through the media all the time. One of them's fake news. The other is Trump derangement syndrome. And they bug me. And I think they bother you to a certain extent, Stu, because it makes it, I don't know, it just makes it seem like everybody who says anything about the president has Trump derangements. And that's not the case. I mean, we don't have it. And we complain about some of the things he does.
Yeah, I mean, the test usually is whether you can find things that you like, right? I mean,
yeah.
We can, and we've made, you know, we've gone through many, many things that we do like that the president has done.
But I will say,
even his critics, though, I don't think are always affected with Trump derangement system.
But,
like, if you're a liberal, right, and you see things like Neil Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, you may very well not like those on ideological grounds. That doesn't mean you have Trump derangement syndrome. That means you just don't like his picks, right? There seems to be a different situation going on for some people, though.
Although, yeah, if there's any, and if there's any location that's infected with supposed Trump derangement syndrome, it's just about everybody at CNN, including Jeffrey Toobin. I mean, he's a guy that once in a while makes sense, but not really when it comes to Trump.
Yeah, he just there's a sign of the, if you're going to make Trump derangement syndrome into something, there's a sign of it of like pulling every issue, no matter how separate, from race and hatred, bring all of them to that. No matter what it is, whether it's a Supreme Court pick, whether it's a tax decrease, whether it's talking about North Korea, whatever you can, bring it back to the idea that the reason he's doing X, Y, and Z is because he hates black people.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's just going to that same boring analysis, saying every single thing revolves around that one issue. And it shows, of course, it reveals your obsession with that issue. It reveals your obsession, not ours, but your obsession with skin color, with your obsession with, you know, reproductive organs, your obsession with that. That's not something that we want to care about, but you're constantly bringing it up.
And this is a perfect example from yesterday with Jeffrey Toobin when he was talking about the president saying how if Republicans lose in the midterms and the Democrats take control of the House, there's going to be violence in the streets. And listen to the way Jeffrey Toobin spins that.
The theme here is, I'm Donald Trump and I'll protect you from the scary black people. Antifa is widely perceived as an African-American organization.
No, it's not.
And this is
not
just part of the same story of LeBron James and Don Lemon and Maxine Waters and the NFL players and the UCLA basketball players. This is about black versus white. This is about Donald Trump's appeal to racism. And it just happens all the time. And we never say it. Or we don't say it enough for what it is.
Don't say it enough.
But that's what's going on.
That is amazing. Okay. Antifa is widely considered just black people. By whom? By you, maybe? Like you said, but like we're just saying, Stu, that says more about him than it does Donald Trump.
Yeah.
A lot more. I mean, that's racist.
Yeah. I mean,
because nobody considers Antifa just black people. I consider them anarchists. I consider them hell-bent on chaos and communism. I don't consider them black necessarily.
Yeah. But even more than that, we've done a lot of coverage on this group. We've done multiple, Glenn's done the week-long chalkboard on them. He's done multiple big monologues about them, their history, where they came from. First of all, they did not come from African-American roots in any way. They came from, it started back in World War II. But beyond that, all the videos we've seen of Antifa, I'm not saying there's no black people.
They're usually
not. Organization, but I can't think of one picture in my brain of ever seeing a black person in Antifa.
Yeah, I can't either.
I'm sure they are. I mean, just because odds. but I can't remember ever seeing one. They're almost always like the person who you think you're going to bump into Starbucks the next day. Some like, you know, tortured, angsty, you know, 22-year-old who, you know, who went to too many communist college courses and now thinks they're going to change the world by throwing things at people. Right. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone make the point before, ever. This is like the first time I've ever heard the point that black people are associated with Antifa in some way.
Me too.
They're just, I always think of it as like that, like Seattle, Starbucks-y, you know, angst. I don't think at all. It's not a racial organization at all. It started against fascism back in the day, and you can make an argument when it started, it actually did good things, but it's been evolved to, at this point, it's ridiculousness. I mean, it's just anything that they
don't
love.
They're just anarchists now.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just left-wing anarchists, and it's agonizing to continually hear the nonsense that everything's about race, and you know that just diminishes when things are about race.
Right.
When you make everything about race, you've just watered down the actual racism that does exist, and we see from time to time. Certainly not as much as CNN sees it, but I don't think I've ever heard Donald Trump even say anything about Antifa being groups of black people.
No.
I haven't heard anybody saying it, not just us.
Yeah,
nobody claims that it's about blackness.
And this is what surprises me all the time. Like when you have these issues that pop up with race, it's the left has immersed themselves so completely in this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And to them, it is like the ultimate equation that solves all math problems. You know, it's just, I remember when, you know, Barack Obama was going and they talked about an apartment and they said that was racist. It's like an apartment. I lived in a lot of apartments. There's a lot of white people that live in apartments. Way more white people live in apartments nationwide than black people do. I mean, it's just an absurd thing because
Chicago was a dog whistle for black people.
Right. And like, no,
what?
There's a lot of violence that goes on there.
Yeah. Yeah, Chicago. That's code for black people.
It's an absurd instinct.
The word car, that's code for black people.
Yeah,
yeah, car.
Really?
Mm-hmm. The word the. If you use the too much, it's code word for black people. You mean the black people. That's what you mean when you say the word the.
What explains that motivation, though?
Racism. I think it's racist. Yeah. I think that in and of itself is racist. I think Jeffrey Toobin's a racist. I'm just so tired of beating around the bush with these people on what they are and who they are. I'm really kind of done with it. When you see race everywhere, when that's all you think of, maybe you should turn that, you know, look in the mirror, become a little bit introspective. Maybe you're the racist.
Yeah, because I think there's an instinct, especially with the older. I mean, we used to say this about Chris Matthews. Chris Matthews went through a generation in which race was such a big issue for people. And it was something that was constantly talked about. And I, you know, really until Obama kind of got in there and, you know, he really came from that perspective of viewing everything through the prism of race. He constantly saw things in racial terms.
To the point where he said this.
You know, I forgot he was black tonight for an hour.
Yeah, right.
Because usually that's all I think of.
That's all I think of. Right. Like when you think of everything in the term of black and white, well, shockingly, everything becomes a black and white issue.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the same thing that happens with conspiracy theorists, right? Conspiracy theorists, when you get down the road to 9/11 and you get down the road to Sandy Hook and you go down all these things, well, of course, every shooting seems like a false flag to you.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you see something, you think it's a conspiracy theory with the government. And it's the same thing with the left and race. It's not this. There are actual things, just like with conspiracy theories. Governments do actually do bad things. They have done things at times that are really terrible. But it's the same thing with this, where you have racial issues that are real. There are actual racial issues that come up. Mm-hmm. But when you see everything that way, you can't stop yourself from pulling things that are, you know, 15 lanes over from race back into your lane, because that's all you think about.
But it also, like Pat said, then lessens the real racism.
Yeah.
I mean, it just weakens that all the heck. And that's what the same with, you know, the full Trump derangement syndrome. You know, there are times when you want to be against Donald Trump, but you listen to the deranged syndrome people and you're like, OK, well, no, I'm not that bad.
Yeah. No, if you don't want to be those people.
I'm not going there with you.
I mean, in a way, that's letting someone else control the way you feel, which I don't like either. You know, just because the media says stupid things shouldn't affect my opinion. I should be able to come up with my opinion on my own. But this is another example of it. They did this thing a while ago where it was like, you know, 13 of the last 15 people that Donald Trump has called dumb were black. And this proves, and Tubin actually kind of references it there.
Except
with
that seven
Waters.
Or eight of them were the same person.
Yeah, no, yeah, I think it was something like 10 of 11 or something like that.
Yeah,
Maxine Waters and Don Lemon, the two.
Right.
So, and you also, to believe this theory, you have to also believe that he was not racist at all until he was elected, because he did before that. He was calling white people dumb all the time.
All the time.
And then for the whole first year of his presidency, he only called one person dumb, Mika Brzezinski, who's white. So you have to believe he developed the racism, not in his first 71 years, but in the last year. And in that last year, he developed the racism solely based on Maxine Waters and Don Lemon. Isn't an easier explanation of that is he doesn't like Maxine Waters and Don Lemon? Maxine Waters and Don Lemon have been recently criticizing him. And what Donald Trump does in those moments is call them dumb. It's just like he called Jeb Bush dumb and Marco Rubio dumb and Ted Cruz dumb.
He had a really good point there. Jeb Bush is dumb.
Some people are. So is Maxine Waters.
Yeah, she is. Yes,
now, Don Lemon, I do not think is dumb.
Yes, she is.
He is an opponent, and he's liberal at times, and I don't. But Maxine Waters, I think, pretty clearly is dumb. She makes incredibly stupid points.
She's made a good case for being dumb the last few years, if not her entire life.
Her whole career.
I mean, there could be other examples. Maybe she's, losing her sharpness as she gets later in life. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, she has tripped up and made really insane comments. Hank Johnson. Hank Johnson comes out
Guam's
and says, Guam's going to
tip over.
Can we not say that he's dumb because he's black? He happens to be a black person.
No, that's
who said
a dumb,
that. That's a dumb comment.
Dumb comment.
White or black, whoever said it, that's a dumb comment.
Mm-hmm.
Guam's not going to tip over because you put too many military forces on one side of it. That's not what islands do. Okay? So, I mean, can we not observe that sometimes people have those moments?
Do you have that from a scientist?
Yeah, I
had it from a military source.
Yeah, okay.
Who immediately was like, we don't anticipate that happening. Great. One of the greatest responses of all time.
So good.
But taking these things from issues that are not related to race and trying to move them into that analysis weakens the actual case. And it doesn't make any sense. It's the same thing, like the alt-right. Largely speaking, the alt-right is a small group compared to, conservatives and Republicans and everything else. But when you try to call every single Republican alt-right, you fail. You fail because you then weaken the case against people like Richard Spencer, who is really a problem. Mm-hmm. Like that theory, that his theories, I think, are real negative and certainly have nothing to do with conservatism. But when you bring like Mitt Romney in and you call him alt-right, you lose all value in your criticism.
Yeah. And all credibility.
Yeah.
888-727-BECK. It's Pat, Stu, and Jeffy for Glenn on the Glenn Beck Program. It's Pat, Stu, and Jeffy for Glenn this week. You believe it's almost Labor Day already? What, Monday, right?
Yeah,
it's Labor Day. So we got that 3-day weekend coming up. Stu, are you taking a 4-day weekend? Friday off as well
I'm
as
like
Monday?
Working at home and stuff, but I don't have. You're doing
all the working
work
at home.
I'm not taking a stop.
It's my whole freaking life. I'll take that one all day. No, but I did the show solo Monday. Pat solo Friday. Well, Jeffy, will you be in Friday?
Yeah, I think Jeffy will probably be here.
Sorry about that. And also, we don't do the. We have got a TV show. We have some other stuff going on, but you'll be here by yourself, except for the criminal that you're sitting across from. by the way, News and White Matters happens tonight and every night. Actually, we're doing it now. That's 5 days a week, which is pretty cool.
We added Friday.
Added Friday. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of the reason for that is there's been a really big reaction to the podcast. And it's one of those things that people really like listening to as well as watching. So you can watch it on demand at any time at theblaze.com/TV or go to iTunes and pick up the podcast. It's a great review kind of the big stories of the day and all of us talking about them. So check that out. News and Why It Matters. On iTunes.
And there is so much to talk about today. Once again, there's a huge effort to try to end the recitation of the Pledge of Allegiance in public schools. And it's the same guy. This time, rather than being the person who brought the lawsuit, he's the attorney for the atheists who brought a lawsuit. Michael Newdow. You remember this guy?
Him again?
He's still trying to get rid of the Pledge of Allegiance. It's amazing. Also, we got to talk about the Chicago priest who says the Pope won't be distracted, you know, by this meaningless sex abuse thing. He needs to focus on global warming. We'll get to that.
So not a good look.
There is yet another civil asset forfeiture story to tell you about.
Sickening.
Oh, wow. If you listen to this time incredible. Yesterday, you heard the crazy one in Utah. This one's another insane story where people's property just getting taken for no reason.
So hard to believe that this could continually happen in America. And NPR has a really surprising study that they did. I'm blown away that NPR, first of all, paid attention to it in the first place. Secondly, actually reported their findings because this doesn't seem to fit their narrative.
No, and it's one of those stats that when you hear it, it blatantly fails to you as possible. You know, mm-hmm. you'll see liberals constantly share these numbers. There's been 7,000 school shootings this right. year. You're just like, is there any moment where you just sit back and say, there's no way that's possible? Like, you obviously know it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any part of you that gets to that point in your analysis?
Well, there were supposedly, in 2015, 240 school shootings.
Right.
And we know that's preposterous.
Of course.
That didn't happen.
Now, sometimes they get to those numbers in various ways. For example, a guy who has no association with a school, at midnight, feels despondent, leaves his home, pulls into the back corner of the school parking lot and shoots himself. Is that a school shooting?
Well, no, to any an incident with a gun on school grounds.
To any gun-hating organization, that's a school shooting. And they'll put that in. Mm-hmm. You'll have times where police officers will come and the police officer will mistakenly shoot his gun that hits no one. And they'll call it a school shooting.
Yeah.
There have been times where pellet guns, some kid will bring in a pellet gun and shoot one of his friends and they'll call it a school shooting. These are the type of things they go in there to deduce the numbers, because we know the problem is there. There is a problem with school shootings.
Mm-hmm.
However,
we know now we don't have to juice the numbers because there was 240 shootings in 2015.
And this is a U.S. Department of Education report. So, you know, it's some credibility, I guess, behind it. It's not like, you know, it's not Mother Jones or, you know, Every Town for Gun Safety. This was a government report, which people, generally speaking, will take seriously. The year was 2015, 2016. Nearly 240 schools reported at least one incident involving a school-related shooting. NPR, God only knows the reason, decided to actually check into this, which is amazing in and of itself. Because usually when there's a stat about guns that make guns look bad, nobody looks into them. That's kind of the policy.
Yeah.
But in this case, what they found was amazing. 240 school shootings. They write, in 161 cases, schools or districts attested that no incident took place or couldn't confirm one. So what they're saying is not the stuff I'm talking about before, where like it's a pellet gun or it's a guy committing suicide near school grounds. No, they're saying 161 of the 240 were just nothing.
It's even more amazing than that, because of the remaining 59 cases, some of those couldn't be confirmed or disconfirmed. So they're unsure on them. Oh, they actually found only 11 confirmed by either the schools or through news reports. 11 out of 240. It's amazing.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
And, you know, again, if you have a school shooting, it's probably going to be easy to confirm. You know, you call Parkland School District right now, they're going to be able to confirm a school shooting occurred there.
Yeah.
Some of this is amazing. The civil rights data collection for 2018 required every public school, more than 96,000, answer questions on a wide range of issues. What it appears is they put the wrong number. Like I think it was Cleveland, put 37 in for school shootings, and they meant to answer the question before it. So
gosh.
Now, if Cleveland had 37 school shootings, I feel like we might have heard of that.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
This week with Pat Stu and Jeffy. Just learning about the right-wing conservative echo chamber that's going on here where, you know, there's no bias in the media, especially at CNN, which is, it's good to know. It's good to know that everybody's right down the journalistic middle.
That's what they do.
When it comes to Donald Trump.
It's all fair.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck Todd went into this and made sure we understood why people believe there is a media bias. Listen.
The truth of the matter is 62% think the media is biased. So in other words, if you look at the approval rating of Donald Trump,
well, the conservative echo chamber created that environment. It's not. I mean, it has been a tactic and a tool of the Roger Ailes created echo chamber.
Yes,
so let's not pretend it's not anything other than that.
The Roger Ailes created echo chamber. Like Fox News makes up for all the mainstream media bias.
Of course.
Oh, that's amazing.
It is amazing. He's dead, by the way, Roger Ailes, just in case anyone's wondering.
For a while now.
Yeah, for a while. It's an interesting thing because there's never any responsibility taken for what the media actually does. We talked about that just a few minutes ago with the claim that Donald Trump is a racist from Jeffrey Toobin, and because he calls black people dumb in the past, that means that he thinks all black people are dumb. And when he criticizes an NBA player like LeBron James, again, he's criticizing anyone who opposes him publicly enough for him to notice. That's basically the Donald Trump policy. Mm-hmm. If he notices that you said something bad about him, he'll say something bad about you. If he doesn't notice it, then he'll probably ignore it. You know, he doesn't. That's the way it works. But this latest story that happened with CNN, and people are criticizing this as if it was, you know, it's again the right wing echo chamber calling it fake news. CNN reported that Donald Trump knew about the Russian meeting before it happened. Now, if that were to be true, it would be a pretty significant development in the story. And it was treated as if it was a pretty significant development in the story. They said they had multiple, you know, important inside credible sources that talked about this. And only weeks later, after the story has run its course, after everybody's repeated it 1,000 times, do we find out that one of the sources that CNN had was Lanny Davis. Now, Lanny Davis is the attorney for Michael Cohen. Now, there's no way you can say it's a fair... Like, Lanny Davis, you know, say what you want about him. You can never take an attorney's word who's advocating on his for his client as a legitimate, unbiased source. He's just saying anything that will help his client. That's his job. So in the story, they cite Lanny Davis as one of the sources for Trump knowing in advance about the Russian meeting. And now Lanny Davis is saying, oh, yeah, by the way, I don't actually feel any confidence in that information anymore. So Davis is coming out and saying, you know, look, this story probably isn't true. CNN is standing by the story anyway because they're saying, well, we had other sources who told us that, too. Put that aside for a second because, you know, it's ridiculous to stick around with a story like that, I think, when you have a major part of your sourcing fall apart. At the very least, you should say there are now major doubts about the story because one of our major sources fell apart. However, we still do have other sources, available and we're checking into it. I mean, at least you give some sort of, you got to step back from it a little bit. CNN isn't. But bigger problem than that is, one, how you include Lanny Davis as a source on anything about Michael Cohen. If Lanny Davis is saying it, you got to say Lanny Davis is saying it. He's a paid advocate for Michael Cohen. And we need that as part of our legal system. But we don't need that as part of journalism. You can't just be quoting the random claims of a lawyer as proof of anything. You can say their lawyers are making this. You can say a source from their legal team made this argument. That's okay. But you can't just act as if they're just this fair arbiter of the story. And more importantly, they included a quote or a section about Lanny Davis in which they asked for comment and Lanny Davis would not give comment on the story. Well, that's just flatly a lie. He did give comment. You included it in the story. He confirmed your source. He was one of the sources for the story.
If not the only source.
He gave no record, probably the only source. He gave no on the record comment. Mm-hmm. But what you are telling your audience, the source couldn't have been Lanny Davis. It had to be more credible than that because Lanny Davis wouldn't give us comment. We asked Lanny Davis about it and he wouldn't say anything. Well, he did say something. And we now know he said something because Lanny Davis told us he said something. And that's a sort of thing that it happens all the time with the media, where they are just, they're so itching to get something that will take the president down and that one story that's really going to change things, when I don't know if anybody's noticed, nothing's going to change things. I mean, there really, it does not seem to be any story that could be printed that would change, for positive or negative, Donald Trump's approval rating. It's been between 38 and 45 by most credible polls his entire presidency. Now, 38 and 45 is a bit of a range, but not much. You know, when things are going well, it gets up to around 45. When things are going poorly, it gets down to 38. And sometimes when things are going really poorly, it activates his base and it goes up to 45. And sometimes when things are going really well, people get bored and it goes down to 38. It's just in that range. It's almost random chance at this point. His approval rating is probably around 41 or 42. And he's got a range on either side of that that bounces back and forth. People have made their mind up on Donald Trump. The man has been one of the most publicly accessible figures in our society for 30 or 40 years. We all know what we think about Donald Trump at this point. So the idea that they continually try this and bend every rule that they would not bend for other people and take every liberty they can to make sure the people, finally, this story is going to be the one that convinces everyone that they should turn away from this guy. I don't know what would make that happen or would make people turn to him at this point. You know, we look about the African-American approval rating, and it has improved. There's one poll that shows it very high, a Rasmussen poll, but most polls show it has improved slightly, but is still pretty low. You could easily make the argument, and Trump makes it from time to time, that there have been really good results. The black unemployment rate is as low as it's ever been. There's he's actually addressed some of the criminal justice reforms that, you know, the community has been asking for a long time. There's a real argument to be made that he should have a higher approval rating among African Americans, but they've made their mind up largely. So this, on both sides, everybody's made their mind up, and everyone just keeps trying to come out here and act as if they can change it with their next story. I don't know what could change it. It will be interesting to see if the winning idea goes away, how is he received? If what many of the pollsters are predicting, and they're not always right, as we know, but as right now it looks like, state of the race as of right now, looks like Republicans are going to lose the House. There's a chance they could lose the Senate. I think it's very unlikely, though. I think that's very unlikely. That would be a real cataclysm. But if it were to happen... and he lost both houses, you know, both sides, and he became, you know, the winning sort of feeling around him wasn't necessarily there. I mean, certainly he would take part of the blame, as every president does when their party loses power when you're president. It would be interesting to see if people care then. I don't think they will.
I don't think so either.
I think they'll just blame, you know, well, Republicans, that's the swamp or whatever, and you kind of move on with your life. I don't know that there's anything, because there is a real analysis, and many people have made it, that Donald Trump has done a good job on policy, and that's a really good reason for you to approve of him if you're a Republican, and at least on a lot of things. There's another part of this equation that just turns out to be emotion. The people, we certainly recognize it on the left, right? I mean, there is so much reflexive emotion against this guy for every single thing that he does. They'll do everything they can. They'll take things where he makes an offhanded comment. They'll try to take it exactly literally and then show you 25 other examples about how presidents said other things in the past. You know, we'll obsess for multiple days about how high he put the flag for John McCain and, you know, whether he was responsive enough or really felt the amount of love that he should have for you know, this one of his arch enemies in politics who, you know, passes away. You can absolutely obsess about those things. But it's not going to change anybody's mind. And I think there's certainly a part on the right, as we've seen over the years, too, that just loves the guy and is not going to go anywhere no matter what he does. So maybe the answer here is just to not constantly obsess about this person. You know, maybe we look at other things in our life. I mean, he certainly seems crazy to be able to defend himself without other people getting on his side all the time. He seems to be very capable of that. It's like it seems to be the thing he really enjoys about the job. I mean, he really does seem to like getting in the middle of those things, and I think that's why a lot of people love him so much.
Oh, he most definitely does. And I'd like to do that, Stu, but then he tweets something, and I can't. I just can't walk away from
it. That does seem... You know, the media should really look at it and say, okay, should we cover this story about Donald Trump? Well, is the story about something he tweeted? If that's your answer, then the answer should always be no. Right? Like, who cares what he tweets? The same thing with I would even argue... When Donald Trump says something, the media should largely ignore it And I know the left will get all pissed off about that because they'll say, well, what, you were just ignoring what the president says or what the president tweets? Well, I mean, he outwardly tells us all the time that the things he's saying are just negotiation.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, yeah, like he says it all the time. He tells you the things he's saying are for different purposes, whether it's to piss one of his enemies off, whether it's to slam somebody, whether it's just to get a better negotiating position. Right? When he says something about North Korea, should you go out there and report it, you know, crazily for months, or just realize he's negotiating, he's saying what he thinks is going to help his base, and just why spend time on it if you know that's the answer? You know, I mean, Trump likes getting into these battles. He likes, you know, the, sort of the back and forth of the you know, the verbal conflict. He likes it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times, in his own words, he says things for different reasons than he means them.
And I think the media likes it, too. As
yeah,
much
I think
as
so
they
too.
Complain
I think so too.
About this battle, they love it. No. Otherwise, they'd be backing off of it. But you got people like Jim Acosta, who is just soaking up the attention. He loves it. This is helping his career. Jim Acosta will probably be able to write his ticket to whatever he wants to do next because everybody's focused on him, and he's the number one enemy in the media of the president. And so he loves it as much as Trump does.
Yes.
That's why they're just not going to stop, because they think it's good for them, and it's creating a lot of attention for him.
Yeah. And I really do think, you know, if there's a better timed book than Addicted to Outrage, which is coming out from Glenn in a couple of weeks, I mean, I can't think of one, because this is exactly the problem. The media knows they get clicks from throwing the outrage out there, whether they, this is the big point, whether they feel it or not. I have to imagine that, you know, you go, if you're one of these people that are going on CNN all the time, you've just got to be like, oh, God, do I really have to talk about another one of his tweets?
Yeah.
Like, right. We all know he doesn't mean that, or what, we all know this isn't real. We all know that him saying that Antifa is dangerous has nothing to do with black people. We all know that. Again, I can't, someone looked, you know, started searching and did find one black person in Antifa in the way background. Like, and everyone in the foreground is white. It's a, I, to me, largely speaking, I don't know, 90%+ white organization.
I bet it is.
Never really thought about it until now.
Yeah, I never thought about it either, but at least my impression from all the videos I've seen, it's always white people doing the violence. It's always white people throwing things at people. It's always white people hitting people with bats. It's all, I absolutely things that way. But if you are in this constant outrage cycle where you have to blow up everything into something that it's not, you know, I mean, I guess that's what you do.
Is there a way that someone could get Addicted to Outrage, the new book by Glenn Beck?
It's an interesting question, Jeff.
Because I don't see it anywhere in front of me. So I
unfortunately, the answer is no. You cannot. Yes. You can pre-order it at Amazon and everywhere else. But it's coming out on September 18th. So you should do that if you feel like it.
888-727-BECK. Glenn's on vacation this week. It's Pat Stu and Jeffy for Glenn. Hey, last night, the Democrats embraced another socialist in Florida this time. This time, the big socialist victory happened in a fairly red state. So it'll be interesting to see how the Democrat nominee fares in the general election against the Republican. But once again, the Democrats, who claim the Republicans are the ones who have gone so extreme, they've turned to socialism. And a socialist for their hopes in the election in November.
Obviously a huge gift to Republicans.
I hope so.
I mean, it doesn't mean necessarily that it's going to work out, but if they had a chance of winning, they will have a better chance of winning against a socialist.
Yeah.
That is, especially one that's, you know, talking about it so overtly. This is a Sanders-backed candidate.
A guy who was kind of in trouble in his campaign, and then Sanders came down and seemed to push him over the edge.
That's why, and Trump pushed the Republican over the edge.
Yep, and in Florida as well. Yeah. DeSantis. It's interesting, the opposite happened in Arizona, where Kelly Ward and Arpaio lost to a more conventional sort of... Now this is, of course, right after McCain passing away, which may have played into that. Also, two candidates kind of that were very Trumpy, if you want to say, like Ward and Arpaio. Obviously, Arpaio was very much that way. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of two candidates splitting that vote maybe a little bit. Either way, that one went kind of to the establishment. So, I mean, really, these races have been mixed. I mean, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez had a candidate she was fighting for and got destroyed. Something like 86-14.
So it's still none of her candidates, none of her endorsements have worked out, have they?
I don't. I can't think of
she's like 0-8 or 0-9 now. So, I mean, that's
Sanders
a positive thing.
Is the same, you know, certainly same policy-wise. And his, you
his
know,
guy,
his, where his guy came through, in a tough race. So.
Andrew Gillum, the Tallahassee mayor.
Glenn Beck.
With Pat, Stu, and Jeffy this week for Glenn. You know, there's some kind of Ruth Bader Ginsburg hysteria going on right now. And I, you know, not only is there a documentary, there's a major movie release coming out, I think, on Christmas Day. And now there's a CNN special. Are they running the? Is it?
I think they're running.
They're
the documentary.
Playing they're running the documentary.
Yeah. Which is incredible.
Man, are they promoting that thing?
Ruthsteria.
Yeah, they.
Ruthsteria is good. I like that.
I like Ruthsteria. It is really amazing. You know, again, there was a Ruth Bader Ginsburg documentary made and just like praising her. There's like a little cult following around her. Like, and it's kind of one of those things that here's this little tiny old lady who's super tough and doesn't give up on her. You know, and of course she's super liberal, which helps. But I honestly think it's this part of it is like sort of a Betty White syndrome where like I, you know, I love Betty White, but like there was that thing
but
she had
Betty
a few
White's
years
got
ago.
Some charm.
Oh, yeah.
Bader Ginsburg.
Well, yeah, no. But after you reach a certain age and, you know, I'm well aware of this is that after you reach a certain age, people are like, oh, he's cute.
Yeah,
what, I haven't reached that yet.
Well, you've reached.
I'm well aware of it.
You haven't reached the age where people think you're cute, but you have passed Ruth Bader Ginsburg's age. Yes.
But it also is, I think you're right with the Betty White syndrome, and I think also it's, man, we've got to build her up and make her happy so she doesn't leave.
I think there's something to that, too.
Yeah, could be.
Because I will tell you this, if she were to retire tomorrow,
oh.
they would hate her more than anybody
yes.
has
be
ever
vilified.
Been hated.
How dare you?
How dare you leave
poison.
Now?
Poison.
Well, they did it to Kennedy. They bludgeoned him for leaving.
They loved him for years because he was the quote unquote conservative that kept siding with them.
Yeah.
He was the greatest guy in the world until he was gone. And but then he was the worst guy in the world.
The Ginsburg thing is so amazing because there seems to be, I mean, other than the speculation, I just can't figure out what the reason for it all of a sudden is.
I think she's an interesting character in which she's, if you think about it, if you're a liberal, right? Like the same way I love Clarence Thomas, right? Clarence Thomas, because he's generally, he's the most conservative person on the Supreme Court. And at least, you know, depending on how you measure it. And those things are always tough to measure, but he's certainly one of the top one or two. And he's a, you know, I think he does a great job on the Supreme Court. That part of it, if you're a liberal, you love Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She never disappoints you. She's
correct.
always on the liberal side. Mm-hmm. She never, this one, she went the other way. She's super predictable. 100% like, you know, basically Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, add about 100 points to the IQ and put her in the Supreme Court, right? Like it's that sort of arrangement.
It
of
does
course,
seem like that.
Of course the left loves that, right? I mean, you know, she's, and you know, that's part of it, I think. Another part of it is, you know, just her physical sort of stature, right? Like she's this kind
she's
of tiny
mm-hmm.
like old lady.
And just a powerhouse.
Who's just still a powerhouse, you know? Right. Like, and I think that's one of the things they like about, you know, Betty White. That's how Betty White had that resurgence
in
some ways.
In the past, we heard what a relationship she had with Scalia and how he loved her and they loved to battle. So she's had that kind of bit of, a little bit of love with that.
But can you imagine?
And she's fought. For women's rights.
For women's rights.
For so long.
All the causes that are popular. But I mean, think about this from a news organization standpoint. This is essentially a pro Ruth Bader Ginsburg propaganda piece. She, you know, it's basically trying to turn her into a cult hero, which has sort of happened. And this is on that level. Should CNN be airing that? I mean, to me, the answer is no. Even the same thing with, you know, with Scalia. Right. Like Scalia passes away. Should you make a documentary or air a documentary that's a one sided propaganda piece about Antonin Scalia if you're a news organization? Probably not. Right. I mean, if you're going to do the thing about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, you probably also have to do it for Antonin Scalia if you want to even attempt to look fair.
Well, the good thing is that she believes in the United States and the Constitution. And
we saw that in the trailer.
There's
for the
nothing
movie coming
better.
Up.
Yeah, absolutely.
We saw that in this.
The word woman does not appear even once in the U.S. Constitution.
Nor does the word freedom. Your Honor.
Booyah! Nail him.
Wow.
That's supposedly based on a true incident, I guess, from her past, which was in her 30s and her 20s. I don't know, but the Supreme Court justice leans in and says, the word woman doesn't appear even once in the U.S. Constitution.
Nor does the word freedom, Your Honor.
Except for, well, it does. But other than that, don't worry about the
fact. That's great.
It's not in our Constitution, though, right? I mean,
it's in our Constitution, but you've got to go all the way to the First Amendment before you find the word freedom. So it's pretty tough. I mean, it's tough to find.
Yeah.
And she is the one who famously, as Jeffy was kind of just pointing out there, said that South Africa's constitution was...
South Africa's is the one which you should focus on, and Canada, because it was written in 1982. Ours is too old. But, for instance, in South Africa...
Hey, what does that analysis mean for her? I love this idea that the oldest person on the Supreme Court can tell us it's, you know, the Constitution's too old.
Yeah.
Should we start throwing out Supreme Court justices at 65, too?
One of the reasons that she really liked the Constitution from South Africa.
Well, they came up with a really incredible concept of an independent judiciary.
Yeah, who would have thought of that?
Why the hell didn't we think of that?
Oh, wait.
An independent judiciary? What if we had an independent judiciary, an independent legislative branch, and you couple that with an independent executive
branch?
Now
you're just talking crazy now.
They're all separate and co-equal. What would happen? I mean, I can't even think what kind of government you'd have then. It's like, what do you mean they came up with we did that 240 years ago. What are you talking about? Have you seen our Constitution, Ruth? Have you read it?
Certainly by her rulings, I don't think she's read it.
And by this little trailer, I don't think she's read it. You're telling us that the word of freedom is not in it? And I love the way she pauses there because it's so powerful.
Well,
so powerful.
The first time I heard it, I thought she was saying, no, the word woman isn't in there, but the word freedom is.
No. Listen to this carefully.
The word woman does not appear even once in the U.S. Constitution.
You could tell he's a bastard.
The word woman.
You can tell. Listen to the tone of his voice.
Almost like Christian Bale's Batman.
Yeah.
The word woman.
It's almost like he's vomiting the word woman. It's so offensive to him. The word woman.
Woman.
Listen to this.
The word woman does not appear even once in the U.S. Constitution.
Nor does the word freedom.
Yeah, nor does the word
nor
freedom.
Nor does.
Your Honor.
Whoa! Oh, my. Ooh, that's powerful. Oof. That's just
What is even the point there? Freedom of speech.
Point is that the U.S. Constitution is flawed. And you know, the word woman's not in it. Neither is the word freedom. Neither do we have, I guess, an independent judiciary that's set apart. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Was she arguing for a new amendment to the Constitution at this point?
In
this moment?
I don't know. Because
the only thing,
I haven't seen the movie yet.
You can maybe think of, and I, off the top of my head, I don't know. But she's just saying that she's not concluding the amendments. Like, we had to amend the Constitution to get freedom in it.
Well,
is that what she's trying to say?
If you would have said... it doesn't appear until the amendments, that's one thing. But because the Bill of Rights is part of the Constitution.
Right, I know. Right? But what I'm saying is, if she's arguing for, which I would maybe suspect, the Equal Rights Amendment, maybe she's saying we have to add in the word woman.
Maybe.
Here with another amendment. I don't know. I'm giving her too much of a break here. But
way too much, and we always do that.
Yeah, I know.
They never do that for us.
No, of course, never. But I'm just trying to understand. I feel like that's valuable to at least attempt.
Try to understand it.
Yeah. But I can't wait till Christmas Day when this powerful...
I'm taking the family. Oh, man.
Yeah. Before we open presents, we're headed to...
Oh, man. I've already got the wine ready to go. Open it up, take a drink, sip of wine, go to the movies, and just celebrate Roosteria. Mm-hmm. Go for it.
And Ruth Bader Ginsburg is about the size of my Elf on a Shelf, too. So it kind of fits with the Christmas
theme. She does look like Elf on the Shelf.
She's so tiny.
Tiny but powerful.
That's tremendous.
It's kind of like tiny, you know, like the same way people think about small dogs. where like, you know, there's really, it's really difficult for a small dog to be ugly, even though like I have pugs and pugs are absolutely ugly, but people think they're cute because they're small.
Yeah.
Right. They're small.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not Jeffy doesn't, but of course Jeffy, you know, look at Jeffy. but there's a, there's that thing where I think when you're small and powerful, it gives you that, like, there's some cool part of that that people like.
Yeah.
And I think that's the main part, because there's no like, you could easily love Briar, who's also old and also super liberal, right? Like, there's you know, you could I mean, you could go and praise Sotomayor, who in some measures is to the left of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and is younger and Hispanic. You could do that if you wanted to as well, but they, they're picking Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I think, because of just physical qualities, which again they say you should never do.
Yep.
But she's tiny and she's old and she's cute and like you want to give her a little hug and maybe pet her.
Right.
You know, and it's,
right.
it's,
you
want to
help
why,
her up and walk with her. And,
You want to just give her a big hug. She's Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I don't necessarily.
I really don't.
But
I want the new Ruth on a shelf now.
Ruth on a shelf is a solid product. That's solid. We could easily get some of those.
Yes.
You feel like your house might be haunted with it, though. I don't think I want to come out in the middle of the night and the thing's just scampering across the ground somehow. Wait, how did that happen? I think it could happen. A Ruth on a shelf easily comes alive.
That'd be tremendous.
And that I don't want.
No, that's scary. That's a frightening thought. 888-727-BECK. It's Pat, Stu, and Jeffy for Glenn.
The word woman does not appear even once in the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah.
Nor does the word freedom. Your Honor.
Oh, booyah!
Your face.
Oh, she nailed him. Ooh, super powerful.
I mean, she is.
We need somebody to make a Ruth on the shelf. we need that, I think.
Ruth on a shelf could be a good product. I think we should make it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, it can't be that. It can't be that expensive, right?
You put it up
in a
at
robe,
Christmas,
you and put
then
it in a robe.
And then every day, you move it further from the Christmas tree because you don't want anything to do with. You want it to be a separation of Ruth and
Ruth and state
and state.
Church and Ruth. That's that. I like that. And you maybe if you have like it's always moving further and further away from, maybe you should put, maybe you post the Constitution somewhere in your house and every day it runs a little bit further away from it. That could be. And maybe on the other side of your house you put the South African Constitution, because we see how well South Africa is
going
right now.
It
just gets closer and closer to South Africa.
I love it.
That's tremendous.
I don't exactly know what the audience is for this product, but I think I'd put it in my house.
And speaking of South Africa, did you see that they ruled 300,000 gun owners have to hand in their guns?
Oh, this is good. This is great.
This is going really well. Everything's going fine in South Africa.
That means
there's
it's
nothing
be
to
safer,
see.
Safer, right?
Yes. There's absolutely nothing to see here. Okay, there's no problem whatsoever, and if you think there is, you're a racist. You're a white supremacist.
Did you happen to read the story from Leon Wolf on The Blaze about South Africa? He did an analysis piece about it, and trying to you know, put it in context and perspective, because there's so much online right now that you can't trust, and you know, some people are saying basically it's, you know, the Holocaust times 50. On the other side, they're saying the life is perfect in South Africa. And, you know, somewhere in between is probably the truth. But, you know, one of the big issues with it is there is a lot of violence in South Africa. The question is whether it's actually based on, you know, farms and race. And there have been incidents of that. But the crime problem in and of itself, I had no idea it was this bad. Listen to this description and tell me you want to live in this place. How bad is the violent problem in South Africa? Let's put it in perspective. In the United States, Chicago gets a lot of publicity for having a shockingly high murder rate. Last year, Chicago had 650 murders in a city with a population of just over 2.7 million, meaning that Chicago had a murder rate about 24 murders per 100,000 citizens. The entire country of South Africa had a murder rate of over 33 murders per 100,000, which means the entire country, including the relatively rural and peaceful portions, has a murder rate that's more than a third worse than Chicago. It's an entire country of Chicago, and then a third worse than that.
Wow.
I mean, imagine how bad the violence problem is. And it seems to be largely associated in cities, well, not necessarily
that's
farms.
Exactly why we need to get rid of the guns, and that's what they're doing.
Right.
I bet that is their, right. what their argument is, right?
You know, you couple the gun grab with the land expropriation without compensation, and you got yourself a really good situation.
Perfect country. It's perfect.
There's nothing wrong there. I don't know why people are getting all upset. Stop it. There's nothing to see here at all. Let's move along.
Yeah.
Let's move along.
South Africa is an interesting study, too, in the idea of what liberals always say about places like Denmark and Sweden and Finland. These sort of, you know, homogeneous, you know, countries where there's never been any history of integration or different cultures coming together. It's been one culture that has lived the same way for a long time. Almost everyone is involved in that culture, has the same traditions, the same things. Mm-hmm. People, when you have different groups in a country, a lot of times they disagree with each other and real problems come out of that. South Africa is obviously an extreme example of this, but it's also why you can't just say, oh, all right, we'll just put universal health care in our country because it works in Norway. You know, oh, we'll just do all the things that they do in Denmark and we'll just do them here. Well, this is a different place.
Yeah, much.
You know, you can't just drop in their crappy, you know, system that I particularly don't want. I like ours much better, but you can't just drop theirs in. It's going to work the same way. It's ridiculous to assume that.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're finding that out themselves. They don't need us to tell them that. I mean, those countries are already admitting that.
They are.
That with, with their immigration policies, the old policies that were so great, they're not so great right now.
All of a sudden they cost way too much, and all of a sudden they're starting to really hurt the economies, and all of a sudden they're starting to drain money from their citizens, and of course this happens,
and all of a sudden they've got people who disagree with each other now because they don't come from the same culture. So you're saying when there's diversity it's a little tougher?
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
And I think that was one of the main things the founders talked about, and our, just generally speaking, our conception of a melting pot, right? Is that where I think this country has benefited greatly from immigration over the years.
Oh, yeah.
In incredible ways. Legal immigration, by the way. But it's been an incredible, improvement on our society. And we've melted into each other. We've taken, I've used this example, but like the NFL's condiment, official condiment was like hummus. Like, think about that 10, 15, hummus. 20 years ago.
Good
now, again,
first of all,
I understand.
So ridiculous.
It's just an advertising It's just an advertising thing. But I mean, give you a better one. The most popular condiment in the United States of America is salsa. It is not ketchup. It is not mustard. Mm-hmm. It's not mayonnaise. It's salsa. Now, is that a negative thing? I mean, if you like salsa, you may think it is. If you don't like salsa, you might think it is. But
no,
the point
it's just
is,
an amazing thing.
It's an amazing thing. And
it shows you the diversity here.
It's because something we didn't just say, well, we don't want your new thing here. Get away. We said, your new thing tastes pretty freaking awesome. Let's have more.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's something that America has done and many other cultures have not. You know,
like
if American culture, God forbid, penetrates another country, there's protests and everyone whines about it. Why not take the good things from our culture, too? You know, you should be melting in the things that are great. We've come up with a lot of freaking great stuff. They have no problem melting in our medical innovations. They have no problem melting in our, technological innovations. But like culture makes people feel stress and strife and anger and protectionism and all of those things. And you shouldn't. I mean, really, you pick and choose the things you like. You know, like guacamole is really freaking popular in the United States. I hate it.
Me too.
I think I can't imagine someone wanting to put this green mushy thing
gooey,
in their mouth. It's just if it touches something that I eat, I want to throw the thing out. That's how hard I am on guacamole. But again, it's a good. A lot of people like it. You know, and it's a positive thing that we're able to have this new product that, a lot of people like. That's a great part about America. That is something that we've gotten away from because now people are trying to come here and protect their old culture here and say, I don't stop touching my culture. The point of this was to melt together.
Yeah.
You know, not to put us all in different kitchenware.
I'm going
to
say the guacamole thing is not a good thing, though.
No, that's obviously terrible. Yeah, it's terrible. Awful. I hate guacamole.
If you hear yourself saying, feels pretty good to see somebody rub their nose in it, You may be addicted to outrage. We've expressed our outrage at everyone and everything that is different. Every thumbs up is like a dopamine surge, and every retweet is a serotonin hit. In my new book, Addicted to Outrage, we bring clarity to this addiction. If enough of us can just drop our anger and outrage, we might just stand a chance to heal ourselves.
Addicted to Outrage by Glenn Beck. Pre-order now at glennbeck.com/addicted to outrage.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
With Pat, Stu, and Jeffy this week for Glenn. 888-727-BECK. The Me Too movement continues to swim along quite nicely. And, you know, make sure that people don't work. And, I mean, and that's fine if people have actually committed egregious crimes.
You mean like one of the founders, Asia Argento, who is apparently now getting thrown out of her jobs,
yes,
which is interesting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting development.
That is interesting. Yeah.
I don't know how to handle this stuff because you have a legal system, right?
Mm-hmm.
What you do is in advance of the trial, you have laws on the books, and then people know what those laws are. And then when you go in and you have a trial and you're found guilty, there on the books is a range of punishment, which mm-hmm. would be applied to the person who committed the crime.
So you're saying after you have, say, I don't know, presented evidence and a jury has perhaps said that there's enough evidence to say, yes, you're guilty. And then after that, there's some consequences.
Yes, that is what I would.
Yeah, but before that, what happens? Because those people, you're a bad person.
Okay.
So
just the accusation is enough to say you're a bad person.
Mm-hmm.
You need to get out of your job.
And that seems to be where we are now. So you feel the punishment right away. You lose all of your jobs. You lose mm-hmm. your company. You lose everything, whether you did it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it is certainly just for people like, let's say, Harvey Weinstein, who did a lot of terrible things. However, on that same front, you should actually be convicted of a crime before the punishment gets associated with you. And we've jumped the gun on that one, and we now believe the person should get punished immediately. And with someone of Weinstein, it's easy. We all suspect that he really did all these things, and it seems overwhelmingly, mm-hmm. there's an overwhelming amount of evidence, including his own words on tape, that indicate that. So, you know, no one really cares on that one. But when it comes to someone like Louis C.K. is a good example of this. Louis C.K. was part of the Me Too movement. And if you remember the story, basically he did things to himself in front of women.
After he asked them if it was okay.
Yeah, awkward.
Right?
You know, like, I mean, as you'd expect from Louis C.K., very awkward.
Yeah.
Hey, can I do this in front of you? Just like,
and, well, one of the stories even was that one girl remembered that he asked, and I said, no, and so it didn't happen.
So it didn't happen. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she said no.
So amazingly,
and he didn't
worked.
Do anything. Yeah.
Right.
Like, right.
The consent
system
worked.
Now, the others said yes, and now they're still complaining about
right.
it. Right. Well, if you didn't want him to do that, then you should have said no.
Right. And then if
right?
he continued, you'd have a case. If
yes.
He,
yes.
If he does. Now, what we
and
have.
From my understanding is that there's no allegation that he ever did that against their will.
Yeah, I don't.
Is that true?
I don't know if I don't know if any of them said that. I don't remember any of them.
I mean, it's creepy what he was doing.
Yes, very creepy.
But he did ask for permission, and seemingly permission was granted.
Yeah, or there's one group of women
that they didn't say anything.
They didn't say anything, and they just kind of laughed at him. And
right, because he said, "I'm going to take my clothes off now, okay?"
And they kind of went uncomfortably, and then stayed.
Right, they didn't leave. He takes his clothes off, and they're so upset they don't leave.
Their argument here.
He's a comedian, and he's
powerful and famous. Now, this is some of these
comedians
were before.
Have all power over people because I wasn't aware of this up until this point.
Well,
comedians have this extraordinary power over people.
How are you still working?
I don't know.
Well, I guess you could argue. I mean, I think their argument is poor here. But their argument is he does have power in the world of being a comedian. And these were people who were trying to rise mm-hmm. Jerry Seinfeld certainly has some impact.
Sure. At the time, he was doing a TV show. He was doing other stuff. He had deals with Netflix. Those are all gone. But at the time, he did. So he did have some kind of power.
Right. Like, you have power. Like, you know, would you say, you know, Jerry Seinfeld could have an influence on a young comedian's career?
Yeah.
I mean, the answer to that, of course, the answer is yes.
Were these all young comedians that he did this in front of?
I know at least a few of them were.
Mm.
You know, there was one who said that, I mean, even talk about a weak allegation. The allegation, again, these are just such weird topics. Mm-hmm. The allegation was that Louis C.K. got on the phone with a woman. And the woman, during the call, believed,
yes.
He never said he was,
oh, that's
but
right.
suspected
I remember this.
That he was masturbating while on the phone with her.
Oh my gosh.
Now, there was no confirmation of that, but that's what she thought was going on. And that was a Me Too allegation.
And he was so powerful that she could not hang up?
I guess so.
Okay.
There you go.
I mean, let's be honest. He did not ask for permission.
Well, he's on the phone.
He didn't say he was doing it either.
No, she just believed it.
She just believed it.
Right.
So the idea is, okay, well, Louis C.K. could then go to some manager
anybody
and say...
Anybody could say that. Anybody who's been on the phone with that guy could say, yeah, I believed he was pleasuring himself when we were on the phone, and I'm really offended by that. And I think for all of my stress... I need like $3.5 million
from
this guy.
I think so, too. No, you know what? I don't want to seem greedy. $2 million.
Yeah. So their argument is, okay, well, he could behind the scenes say, you know what? I just don't like her work. I don't think she's a good comedian. And then she might not advance in her career. And of course, a lot of times comedians will say, you know, anybody will say that. If they feel, a lot of people feel inaccurately that others have thwarted their careers. Right. A lot of people say, oh, well, this person's keeping me down. It's a very human instinct to believe that unless you have real evidence of someone doing it, it's hard to take anything from it. So, and there was very little of that with Louis C.K.
Right.
I think one person may have said that, if I remember correctly.
I was headed in the opposite direction. I think a few of them were saying that it seemed like he did things to help them.
Right, like it was like awkward, and because of the awkward situation, he actually tried to assist them in their career. So Louis C.K., for the first time now, has come out and done a comedy set in New York. Comedy Cellar? Was it the Comedy Cellar?
Yeah.
It was one of those smaller clubs. 115 people were there, not knowing he was coming. So, you know, and Comedy Cellar and Caroline's in New York, a few clubs like that are famous for big time comedians popping out of nowhere. You're just there for a normal show.
Practice their new set.
Yeah, practice their new set, try out some new material, and then leave. So, out of nowhere, Louis C.K. comes out for his first public appearance. Does normal comedy. Does
standing
not mention.
Standing ovation.
Standing ovation before he even starts. Mm-hmm. Does not mention the scandals at all. Just does his little routine, tries some stuff out, and leaves. There was apparently one call from a patron of the concert, of the appearance, said, I wish I would have known in advance so I could have made the decision whether I wanted to come or not. I guess I can understand, though. I bet they would have no trouble filling the room.
Yes.
And I just think this is the issue when you don't use the justice system. There's no punishment that has been allocated already. Mm-hmm. Like we saw Glenn Thrush from the New York Times, and he's been at Politico and a bunch of different things, left-wing sort of White House type reporter who also got a Me Too allegation against him. The allegation against him was that after late night parties, he would often hit on younger employees of the papers he was working for. And again, these are people who want to get into journalism. He's an important, powerful journalist. And there was no accusation that he actually forced anyone to do anything. The accusation was that he should have known better to not fraternize with the younger workers. So, and what happened with him is he's back working. You know, he did not seem to have... He did lose. He was suspended, I think, for a while, but I think he's back now working. But there's no set punishments because there's no legal system here, right? We've decided to go around the legal system.
Right.
And we've decided that these things should be educated in our own minds. What do we think Louis C.K. did? What do we think Glenn Thrush did? What do we think, you know, Kevin Spacey did? And we will allocate those as it comes. Jeffrey Tambor? Had a Me Too allegation.
Yes,
he seems to have felt no repercussions about it at all. After this, he was in The Death of Stalin. I don't know. Do people just believe him because he was, you know, because he's on the right side of things?
Possible. Yeah.
You know, maybe it doesn't seem to be a real obvious pattern here. Is it wrong for Louis C.K. to now be able to come back and talk about things that he thinks are funny in front of people? Well, I mean, I think the answer to that is if people don't show up, he should probably stop doing it. If people aren't interested in hearing what he wants to say, then he can't be a stand-up comedian anymore because people don't want to hear him. Mm-hmm. And that is a, you know, a market-based job. If people like your comedy, they come, and you get to do it for a living. If they don't, and you suck, and they don't come, then you don't.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
So the outrage here that we have to allow, we have to make sure that he never gets in front of people again, and he has to be punished till the end of time, is kind of a crazy instinct. You know, I don't know. Maybe
it's almost as if we're addicted to outrage.
Is this your job this week?
No, I'm not.
This is Jeffy. No, we've come up with a useful job for Jeffy.
You're looking at the stupid poster the whole time right across from me for the addicted to outrage. For those of you listening on radio, that's all I see.
Yeah.
I look at Stu, I see this Glenn Beck.
Well, it is coming out soon, so you can buy that. But I guess it's in some ways is tied to that. Right. I mean, we all act as if we're perfect, and we all act as if we've never made a mistake, and we all act as if we can just slam everybody who has had their public issues, when in reality, like, there has to be, and this is, I think, part of the job of people who really support the Me Too movement and think its work is important, and a lot of it is, that you have to take a stand as someone in the Me Too movement to say this particular claim is bullcrap. This particular claim doesn't rise to the level of
That'd
what we're
nice.
Talking about.
Right.
You know, the fact that there's a statement made by someone that's a little bit sexualized, or, I mean, who's the guy? Was it Amazon, I think? Was it the Amazon guy who was at a party? He was one of the heads of Amazon development, I think, or I think it was Amazon, not Netflix, but it was one of the big streaming providers. And he went to a party and he said some offensive things to a woman at a party. He was hitting on her. And that was, I think, the only allegation, that he was inappropriate in conversation at a drunken Christmas party.
Mm.
And, like, that is something, you know, if you look back at The Office, the show, things like that happened all the time. It's not appropriate, but, like, that person would just have people would think he's a dirtbag, or people would say, do you believe he did this once? But now he doesn't seem to do that anymore. And it would kind of blow over. Now we have to make sure they're fired. We have to make sure they pay some public penance.
And he was?
And he was. He did wind up, I think he resigned. Yeah. Yeah, I think he resigned under pressure is what actually happened.
I mean, who among us haven't been drunk at a Christmas party and started hitting on?
I mean, think about
co-workers.
Quite a few of us.
Who among us?
It's quite a few.
I mean,
quite a few of us. Jeff.
Certainly, Jeffy would. If these standards were around in the 1830s when Jeffy was coming of age, I mean, I can't even imagine. What would have happened to him? But, you know, look, there should be some level. I don't know what the percentage is, but I bet there's half of people wind up meeting their significant other at work.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I'm guessing
it's probably a high percentage.
It's probably a high percentage, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you have, and then if you want to add in people who are at bars that have been drinking, you're even higher, right? I mean, like, that shouldn't mean if you do something inappropriate, and many women made this argument around the Me Too point when that was really happening, is that, you know, that's part of what I want. Like, I want there to be some available level of sexuality that is able to be expressed by someone I'm trying to court.
Mm-hmm.
If not, I mean, there has to be some sort.
Well, we have to realize that no means no, right?
100%.
So when you start bashing Louis C.K., remember he asked.
Right.
He asked.
And that's the thing. It's gone from no means no to don't ask.
Yeah. Yeah, it has.
And, you know, that is
don't
a.
Don't flirt. Don't
flirt.
Ask,
don't ask.
Don't show interest. Don't look. Certainly don't touch. So how do men and women ever.
Like,
get
how
together
do,
again.
I, you know, to ask fundamentally, how does the species continue?
Yeah.
At some point.
That's the problem.
In every relationship, you go in for your first kiss. Rarely are you saying,
hey, do you mind?
Would you mind signing this contract that allows me to, for my lips to touch yours? Like, that's not how it happens. You know, and there are people who misjudge it, right? Like, I mean, I've always been on the case of being such a wuss. That you wait way too long, and eventually it's so obvious that it's time to go for it. That's what I waited till, because I'm a loser. But not everybody's that way. Sometimes people call it wrong.
Yeah,
sometimes, and that shouldn't be. That can be something where we say, hey, that's inappropriate at this place. Hey, don't do that anymore. No, I'm not interested. Thank you. Then the person absolutely needs to stop. But, you know, we there has to be some room for men and women, and maybe men and men and women, to do the little dance.
Yeah.
That is part of it. That's not Harvey Weinstein, but it is part of it.
888-933-93.
Or 888-727-BECK.
Oh, that's what it is. Yeah. Thank you. Pat Stu and Jeffy for Glenn. But Pat Stu and Jeffy for Glenn.
Yeah, you can subscribe to The Blaze at theblaze.com/TV and listen to Pat Gray Unleashed, which happens every day. We have also The News and Why It Matters. I'm going to be filling in for TV again for Glenn tonight. We've got some pretty interesting stuff on socialism and the new wave of it. We saw a big election last night where a socialist in Florida was able to beat out some pretty well-funded competition.
Yeah.
For the Democrats.
As the Democrat Party just keeps going more and more extreme.
Yeah.
Every day.
It's such a weird... I'm not surprised they're getting more extreme and being more overt about it. I'm just surprised with Venezuela going on that this is the time they've picked to do it.
The DNC chair, Perez, already said that's the future.
Future of the party.
Future of the party. The future. Amazing. More in a second. It's Pat. It's Stu. It's Jeffy for Glenn.
Glenn Beck.
It's Pat, Stu, and Jeffy for Glenn. Yesterday we were talking, I think it was around this time, we were talking about... a case in Utah with civil asset forfeiture. This is something that's come up from time to time recently because it's one of the most incredible and most egregious violations, I think, of the U.S. Constitution that I've seen in my lifetime. And we continue to get these stories. Yesterday, we talked to you about the Utah Highway Patrol, which pulled over a guy in named Kyle Savely in Utah. And he had... There was a drug dog that apparently had a hit on something in his car that smelled like drugs, but they found no drugs. So there weren't drugs there. They charged him with nothing. He's never been charged. And this happened 2 years ago. What they did find was $500,000 in cash, which they helped themselves to. They took it.
And that's nice.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a nice little score for the Utah Highway Patrol.
No kidding.
And I think they have to share that. They're trying to decide now how to divvy up the cash between the federal government and the state government.
Not the person.
I think not the person.
They did rule he was supposed to get it back.
Fortunately, the Utah Supreme Court ruled that he needed to get it back, which has not. It still hasn't happened. Now you might suspect that a guy who's carrying $500,000 in cash with him did something wrong to get that money. But we don't know that he did. And it's not illegal to carry $500,000 in cash with you. Maybe he's on his way to pay cash for a house. I don't know.
Yeah, but he obviously was doing something wrong. Maybe it's not illegal.
Well, prove that.
That's the thought.
Prove that.
That's where you do. That's what you do. Yeah. You prove it. I mean, because like, let's just say, for example, you went and you pulled this person over and you took the money. And you looked around the car and you didn't find anything. And then later on, and you know, as the investigation continued, eventually you found that he was a drug dealer.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely, this is all dirty money.
And you charged him.
And you charged him. Okay.
You arrested him and you charged him with a crime.
Right. Would that be just? Now, the outcome would
kind
be just,
of.
Right?
Yeah.
The outcome of it, we're happy
the initial
that a
seizure.
Person committing a crime goes to prison. Mm-hmm. But if you get it through a way that is wrong... Usually those things don't stand up in court,
right?
You can't just go like if we could run if the you know the police department would go house to house and look around everybody's house, they'd probably find something illegal. Certainly, if they got to Jeffy's house, they'd find many things. And
they better have a warrant.
Yeah, right. But that's the thing. Well, that's what we have, right? A warrant. You got to get a warrant. You can't just walk in and look for crimes. You have to have a suspicion of the crimes that's legitimate. Now, I mean, the dog thing is really pushing that standard. Honestly, I mean, the fact that a dog smells something. I know some of these
dogs
are amazing, but they are wrong.
You know, the dog-sniffing dogs are not perfect.
Well, and again, with $500,000 in cash, we know for a fact that most of our money have some kind of drugs on it.
Yeah, that's right. That's true.
The dogs are smell. If they get a hint of some kind of drug,
on
the money.
But you can, I think, make the argument that a dog sniffing something is justification to search for something in the car.
Sure. And then
but when you find something legal in the car, you don't get to take it.
Yeah.
Right? Like if you find a great stereo system in the back, you don't get to help yourself to that because the guy smelled drugs. The dog smelled drugs.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with money. Money is property.
Money is not illegal to carry with you.
No.
When did this start in America that you can't have a large sum of cash with you on a trip.
Yeah.
It's madness.
And we occasionally will hear, I mean, it seems to be more and more frequent where we hear stories like this where someone's carrying around a large portion of their money with them. Sometimes it's someone coming from the restaurant to the bank. Mm-hmm. Right, and they're carrying you know $10,000-$15,000
because it's to the that pizza guy. Yeah. They took his savings.
They took that, but beyond that, how many times is this happening where they're taking $1,000 or $500? We're not going to get stories about that.
Yeah,
how many
times it happens a lot?
Yeah, and would you fight it? I mean, the bottom line is they found nothing and they took your $1,000. You're really going to bother going to court to get $1,000 back? It's going to cost you $1,000 to, and you're going to miss work. You're going to, it means you're going to wind up being more than it would take. You know, in lawyer fees to get the money back.
And you mentioned us not taking a stereo, but in some cases they would take the stereo.
Yeah,
I mean we're seeing where they take cell phones and keys and key fobs and everything
else.
Listen
to this story we just found from West Virginia. This happened on June 9th. West Virginia State Police trooper issued Demetrios Patlius a warning for failing to drive within his lane. So. They pull the guy over. He wasn't driving within his lane. And the officer finds $10,000 in cash that he and his wife have on them. Now, his wife is about 8 months pregnant. And they were headed to the Hollywood Casino in Jefferson County. They were going to go gamble. So they had some cash on them. They'd capitalized on several promotional offers and had 13 and 14, respectively, between them, $100 gift cards on them.
Good for them.
Along with the cash. Okay? So if they had $1,400 gift, they had another $1,400 in gift cards there. And then they got $2,700 worth of gift cards. So the officer who pulled them over started accusing them of smuggling cigarettes, having drugs in the car, gift card fraud, and searched the car, searched the couple.
So he gets to search because he accused them.
Right.
Because he accused them, he can search.
Where's the probable cause here? Searched her purse, and then finally let them go with a uniform warning citation. He just gave them a warning. Charged them with nothing. He found nothing. Well, except for $10,478 in cash, which he took. What? And then I guess they had a total of 78 gift cards in the car. He took those as well.
That's amazing.
How is this possible that you can take their property from them? I mean, the gift cards obviously didn't come from a drug deal. What is this Sinaloa cartel now paying in gift cards?
Maybe.
That may be a way for them to wash their money and clean their money, which is, you know, it obviously could be.
So now they're broke.
But
he left them with $2. He left them with $2.
Not even like a 20, so they can get gas or something. No, nothing.
Didn't charge him with a crime.
And I
didn't find anything. They've been charged with nothing. And yet they lost their $10,478 and their 78 gift cards.
And I think the argument from the police side would be most of the time we find out that these things are right. Mm-hmm. Most of the times we're right. I just don't think that justifies it.
It doesn't.
It doesn't justify
it. It doesn't.
You know, the bottom line is, even if this person, let's say they find out later on that they are dealing with drug dealers, that does not justify taking their stuff before you have evidence of it. Yeah, it just doesn't.
We got to stop this. I don't know how, but somehow this has to be stopped. This, if we are still living in America, this just is, it's unacceptable.
It sure is.
It can't happen anymore.
And, you know, we talked about yesterday about being, you know, because they're short of money. And they even talk in the story. Mm-hmm. I mean, the county in West Virginia gets 90% of the proceeds and the state gets 10% of it. So they're making it so the police officers find it easier to take the money from you because they can. And then once they get it, what happened if they start proceedings, if the assistant district attorney start proceedings on this then you have to go prove that it's yours and that you didn't do anything wrong.
You have to prove that it's yours?
And if you did anything wrong.
It's completely un-American.
Right. But if they don't start proceedings, and they, you can get it back. You can go to them and they can decide, well, we're not going to start proceedings, and they can, they'll give it back to you. Once they start proceedings, you got to go through the whole process, which is where you decide it's not worth it for $500 and a stereo.
Mm. That's it really is incredible. And, you know, the fact that people aren't outraged by this more often is surprising. You know, Jeffy keeps bringing up Addicted to Outrage, Glenn's new book, but it's like, this is a good reason for outrage. Like,
sure,
it, not all outrage is bad. You just shouldn't be addicted to it and getting and going crazy over every little thing.
Correct.
This is a real problem. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if this happened to you? Can you imagine if you had a situation like this?
It wouldn't be good, because I'd probably be arrested or worse, because I would go absolutely nuts. Can you imagine the injustice you would feel if you hadn't done anything wrong? You're just carrying money with you. You're on your way to the casino. You're on your way to buy a car. You're on your way. In one case, a guy had $91,800 to go buy a sound studio, and they took that money from him. That was 3 years ago. He still hasn't gotten it back.
I mean, that's for most people, it's going to be crazy. You know, their life savings. I mean, mm-hmm. Think of the amount of work you put in to be able to put that amount of cash away.
Yeah.
To purchase something that you've always dreamed about having. And then they just rip it away from you for nothing. Again, if there's a crime committed, that's a different story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's a crime committed and you can prove that those funds came from that crime, you have a situation where there's something valid to look at.
But there's no burden of proof here. There's no burden of even probable cause in a lot of these cases. I mean, what's a probable cause when a guy's got a lane violation and then you suddenly take every penny they have? Well, not every penny.
But
left
he
them $2.
Thought mm-hmm. that they were trafficking in gift cards.
That's not enough. Yeah, that's not enough.
Trafficking in gift cards is an interesting business. How does that work, Jeffy? You know everything I know. Everything you know more about crime than anyone I know.
I do know that's. I have read articles where that's how they're starting to, you know, ideas of how to clean money.
So if you have a bunch of cash, you buy gift cards, and then you send the gift cards across the border or whatever. And then people can use them on Amazon.
Whatever you want. Or you get your, or, you know, some places like might give you money.
If, and do we
like,
now know
if
that
if you had a gift card, $100, I give you $75
right
for the gift card.
Good for both of us.
Right.
Is the Gulf cartel dealing in a lot in gift cards now? Do we know that? A lot of these drug transactions wind up in gift cards.
I'm advised not to answer.
I at some point we have to make this into a story. And it seems like when we bring them up, the audience gets pretty fired up about them. It doesn't seem to have the, I guess because it's just happening to a small amount of people. But that's the type of liberty that you have to fight for, right?
They're trying, right? And this story even talks about the West Virginia State House Judiciary Committee considered a bill that would tie civil asset forfeiture to its respective criminal proceedings, which means, you know, if you're acquitted criminally, the seized property can't be forfeited. Don't worry about it. We're going to let that bill die.
Wait, hold on.
So they're still taking it.
Jeez. So they're taking it even if they're acquitted? They go through the trial, they get they're acquitted of the charges, and they still take it?
They still can now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the bill failed.
Hell?
How does the bill fail in that case? I don't understand. I mean, here's some of the things.
Well, these people weren't even charged and they took it.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, if they started, if the district attorney starts procedures saying that, you know, this was property that we seized, then you have to go in and fight it.
Mm-hmm.
To prove.
Right.
If you don't go in and
to
fight
prove
it,
it's yours.
After so many days, they just take it.
It's gone. And here's the county in West Virginia has already auctioned off certain things that they've obtained from people, that they've confiscated.
Right.
Listen to this list. A Nintendo Wii with controllers. Okay, was that done in a drug deal?
Right.
No.
I mean, you were joking about
Come
the stereo.
Shoes, jumper cables, a Mickey Mouse watch. Jogging stroller, Legos, and other toys.
Why would you take Legos from someone's car?
It's unbelievable. You're taking Legos from people?
Wow, that is really amazing.
We're taking it all. We're taking the cash and we're taking everything else, too.
It's pretty bad.
It strikes me as a similar issue to the Kelo case. And they made a movie about it called Little Pink House recently in New London where, you know, this woman built her little dream house near the water. And, you know, the town said, well, we want to bring Pfizer in here. So you guys are all going to, we're going to buy your houses from you. And she's like, I'm not leaving. And then they did eminent domain and they took her house. Mm-hmm. And it went to, up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, in one of the worst decisions I think ever given, sided with the town and allowed her for just, you know, well, mm-hmm. it's helping the tax base, so therefore it's good for the people to get rid of these houses, which of course would justify almost anything.
Yeah, I mean, no
you
kidding.
Could justify almost mm-hmm. anything. You could always come up with a projection that's going to help the tax base. Mm-hmm. But the reaction to that ruling was pretty swift and pretty strong. I think over 40 states passed constitutional amendments or laws in their states to prohibit the government from doing that in cases like this where it's just business reasons. Like, I mean, there's always mm-hmm. going to be something for, you know, a highway or that the eminent domain is, you know, we all know that that's part of it. But, you know, for things like this where you're just bringing, well, we want to give it to a business instead of you. That has been out. I think it's 42 states have passed things to stop that. And that's the type of action that needs to happen here. You know, yeah. you need a bunch of people yeah. going around and saying, hey, wait a minute. We get that at times, you know, law enforcement needs resources. They need these abilities. We're rooting for law enforcement to take out criminals. But you can't just take stuff from people's car and pocket it. And even if they're acquitted, still hold on to it. I mean, it's insanity.
And there's no doubt. I agree with you. But again, what we talked about in the past, too, but those in support of it talk about, well, look, we can hamstring drug dealing networks by leaning on their finances, which yeah. can be more effective than the criminal charges. And they also point out that the proceeds can help police buy much-needed equipment.
That's incredible. They're actually bragging about taking people's stuff to buy stuff.
It's unbelievable. 888-727-BECK. More of the Glenn Beck program coming up with Pat, Stu, and Jeffy. Pat, Stu, and Jeffy for Glenn. 888-727-BECK.
Did you hear the latest outrage from Cynthia Nixon?
No.
She's, you know, going to be debating de Blasio, or not de Blasio, Cuomo, coming up for the governor's race. She's not, you know, she doesn't seem all that competitive, but, you know, it's been a high-profile race. It's New York. She's a celebrity.
Right.
And this got set into, with the hashtag addicted to outrage, if you were taking these submissions for the ridiculous things that people get outraged by, and we'd love for you to send some in at World of Stew on Twitter. We have, you know, people now complaining that they took the bars off of the box where the animal crackers were, so they didn't look like they were caged
yeah.
in.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
Well, now they're complaining about that. That was not far enough. Apparently, they left. They're outraged that does not cure that the Nabisco CEO earns 600 times what the average employee earns or something like that.
What does that have to do with the animal cracker box?
I don't know. I don't know. Or this one. A student yanked a Make America Great Again hat off of another's head and called it a racist and hateful symbol.
Yeah.
This one, though, I love is Cynthia Nixon. She is outraged. Why is she outraged? Well, she wants the debate room to be 76 degrees when the debate happens because apparently is a well-known sexist. It's notoriously sexist to keep a room cold.
Oh.
Now, of course, it is also notorious that if you don't keep a room cold, the people who are on television will start sweating.
Mm-hmm.
And so every single debate stage and every single studio since 1960 has been filled with people in cold environments. It's freezing in here all the time. I mean, how do you think Jeffy's not even sweating right now, which is almost impossible to accomplish. It's because it's like 12 degrees in this room right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
very cold.
So, well, it's not close to 12.
Yeah, it's pretty cold.
It's pretty cold in here. And that's because people don't like watching people on TV sweating as they're talking. No. You know, it's just like ideally you avoid it. You may expect it in an NBA game,
mm-hmm.
But ideally you don't necessarily see that from your anchors.
Especially with Jeffy, since he sweats gravy. And that's just unpleasant to look at.
Yes, it's not.
You
not,
know what I mean?
I thought we were talking about Cuomo.
Right. So Cynthia Nixon is saying that there is a study. There was a study apparently published some time ago in Nature Climate Change in this journal, which said that the office buildings base their climate control fluctuations on the needs of the male metabolism. Since half of the workforce is female, the system is rigged against women who often have colder extremities than their male counterparts. And it's even worse for women on the birth control pill, which can raise women's body's temperatures slightly, making them more responsive to temperature fluctuations. So now we have to be out. Now, look, we all know there's real reasons for that. And I hate the cold. I hate how cold it is in these studios.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they're doing it, you know, to punish me, although Glenn may be.
I know I am.
But I know. But I mean, the idea is 76 degrees? That's
way too hot.
That's way too hot. I mean, yeah. You just got to dress more warmly, I think, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And she knows that.
I know. This is just trying to make a. Again, it's not real outrage. It's an addiction to outrage.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
With Pat, Stu, and Jeffy this week for Glenn. Now, yesterday we were talking about the potential. And maybe I was talking about it on my show on Pat Gray Unleashed. Done so many shows this week, I can't remember which it was.
A lot of shows.
But Alex Jones was caught in a little bit of a sticky wicket, if you will.
A bit of a moment.
Yeah, he was showing how to navigate on his website on InfoWars.
Which does seem to be a high percentage of their programming. Like,
yeah,
a lot of it is just how do you get to the male vitality formula pills.
Because that's how he makes all his money. Yeah. So, yeah, they spend some time with that. So he's showing how to navigate on his smartphone. And then he taps it and it goes back to the original screen that had all of his tabs there.
Yeah, it brings where you see like 9 tabs on the screen at the same time.
Mm-hmm. One of the tabs was a transsexual porn site. And
it could happen to anybody.
It could who's surfing for trans porn, yes. For those of us who don't necessarily frequent those sites, can't happen to you. Okay. So I thought, okay, well, maybe somebody just went in there and here's what he's going to say, even if it's not the case. Somebody photoshopped that into his phone.
Right.
That's
right.
Illogical,
he says
right?
That all the time when there's no evidence of it. Why not go with that defense?
Somebody in the deep state photoshopped that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what he said. Which is fascinating to me. Here's instead how he explained his little trans porn site.
And also, what about the trans porn on your phone, Alex? Are you ever going to talk about that?
Say that again.
Trans porn on your phone. That's all they keep talking about. And
you know, I saw a couple news articles about that. It's ridiculous. I was like looking up some reporter we're trying to hire today and punched in some number. Popped up porn on my phone. Everybody's had porn pop up on their phones hundreds of times. So I'm sitting there with a phone on air showing it to everybody because I couldn't get a URL up in the studio. Uh-huh. And then like something pops up. I'm like, oh, my God. And I looked at it. It wasn't the news blurted out because there was nothing there. They blurred it to then say something was there. Then you went to it with some porn menu. I probably had porn menus pop up 500 times on my phone. So I appreciate your call.
Because you're surfing them.
It's insane, ladies and gentlemen. There's two types of people. People that look at porn and people that lie about it. But I wasn't looking at porn on my phone. I don't take phones on air that I look at porn on.
He's lying about
and
it.
So I saw all that. I didn't respond to it. I mean, if I respond to happy attacks on me, it's ridiculous. But I'll say this. The Amazon ads, the Viagra ads, the weird non-plastic bag ads are taking my iPhone over. iPhones didn't used to be that bad like Androids.
It's a great point there with the plastic bag ban ads that are taking over his iPhone. He does seem to be admitting that he looks at porn.
Absolutely. Again, it's that phone.
Alex Jones looking at porn or trans porn is absolutely not the worst thing about him.
That's
probably one of his better characteristics. So I don't know why that would be a big deal. It's just, you know.
The trans community thought it was unusual because he bashes trans people so much.
Yeah.
And every time there's a trans story, he's raving about it, ranting about it. And so it's interesting that he's actually looking at trans porn when he's ranting about
people.
The
trans site was excited. The trans site was very happy.
Very happy about it. Yeah. Yes. I mean,
isn't the show that he's
fascinating?
Maybe not as transphobic as you once thought.
There you go. He's, and that's probably what he should say. There was a years ago, there was a morning show host in at Texas City that I once lived in, who got into a traffic accident while leaving a gay bar at 2 a.m. and then left the scene and went home or whatever. And so it was kind of an issue. And then so there's a lot of, you know, and he's a conservative talk show host. And so people were wondering, what were you doing at a gay bar? And he said, well, it shows you I'm not homophobic like they say I am, doesn't it? That was his explanation. So maybe that's a good one for Alex.
That's a good response.
Shows you I'm not transphobic. I'm
telling you, it does bode to, you know, one of the things that I live by is clear your search menus.
That's what you, one of the things
your search
good
menus.
Safety tip.
I
thank
believe
you, Jeffy.
In that 100%. Yeah.
So does this happen to you? Does porn pop up on your
hundreds
phone
of times?
500 times? Is that there seems to be a real issue with your phone.
I will say no, that doesn't happen.
Especially on an iPhone. I mean, iPhone is like it's a closed ecosystem.
And when
so
I'm looking for reporters, I will
hire.
Say it has never popped up while looking for reporters to hire.
Well, is it possible that this particular trans porn star happens to have some journalism chops?
Is it possible she's out covering
the tough stories in between porn shoots? I think that's...
It is possible.
It's possible.
Yeah, absolutely it is.
I mean, it's possible. Okay, let's grant him that.
I don't know how much...
Maybe.
Alex knows how tough it is to run a website and have people subscribe to it. And that's what that porn person was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because he offered Alex a free pass.
Oh, really?
To the site. Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, Alex. If you like it, I'm here for you. I thought it was nice.
What an amazing world we live in. It's just an amazing world.
So she did actually respond to this?
Yeah.
And she offered a free pass.
That's pretty smart, actually.
Yeah, no, you might as well jump in there.
But I think the days of the porn sites all popping up on your screen, which did happen in the past, are long gone.
Yeah, I think that doesn't happen as much anymore.
It
certainly doesn't happen 500 times.
No, it does not. Mm-mm. But it does if you don't delete your search history. If you type in a word and it pops, you know, then whatever you've been searching for and bringing up comes up. As a reminder, hey, I'm still here for you.
Is that what happens?
It could happen. That's what I understand. It's possible.
Somebody has told you about that.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, they've had it happen to them, and they related that story to you.
Can you imagine the amount of trans porn being tweeted and sent to Alex Jones right now?
Man.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, it's got to be... people are probably trolling him constantly with it now. Hey, check out this new conspiracy theory I found, Link. This guy's going to be opening up so much transport.
That's
I guess
really
that's what happens, you know?
Yeah, yes.
Whatever. It's not like we had a high opinion of Alex Jones. This happened to a pastor while he was on his church. Like, that might be notable. Like, the fact that Alex Jones does weird things is the least surprising thing.
I mean, it's good for him,
occurred.
Right? It's keeping him in the news other than being blocked from, you know, bringing people to his site.
And by the way, let's say once again, we're absolutely opposed to Alex Jones being eliminated from all of these sites: Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Put his stuff back up and let the people decide. Okay, if they want to see it, they see it. Stop banning people because they have a differing point of view. Now, again, Facebook is a private business, and so are all the rest. So they can do that if they want. It's just not the right thing to do.
Yeah. The interesting part, I think, in this conversation, because I think we all agree that private businesses can do whatever they want. And we all agree that Alex Jones is trash.
Mm.
And we all agree that even though Alex Jones is trash, he should still be left on the on the platform.
Yes.
The interesting addition to this is a lot of these social networks get protections from, you know, legal action. Because they claim to be, hey, we're just user generated content. You know, we're just a platform, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, like for example, if someone were to post child porn on Twitter, Twitter doesn't the employees of Twitter don't go to prison for child porn,
mm-hmm.
right? If someone posts a terroristic threat on Twitter, they then don't.
You can't go to Twitter for that,
right?
And blame
them. Twitter's fault, right?
Yeah,
and they get protections from these situations, as they should, by the way.
Yeah.
Or copyright fraud is another one. If someone posts a copyrighted material, then people, you know, if they do it and don't try to take it down, they can get in trouble for it.
Right.
But generally speaking, if someone just posts something, they'll have a window there to take it down as soon as possible. And it's not like they're going to put Twitter out of business for it.
But for that protection,
right?
There's a responsibility.
Yeah, and their responsibility is to not control the content.
Yeah.
So they can't be a partisan entity.
So you can't
and
be
get
biased.
That. Right. They can't.
They are.
And they kind of are. And Ted Cruz has brought this argument up before.
So it's a good argument.
Yeah. I mean, again, I still think they should be able to to handle their own content, but that, you know, maybe you don't get the same protections.
Right.
If you want to go that direction, you want to make it an all liberal social media site, you should, in my view, should be able to create it. If you want to create you know liberal.com and make it all people tweeting to each other about right. liberal things.
Except that's not what you agreed to.
That's not what you agreed
when
to.
You got these protections. So you're going to have to change the rule if you want to do it that way. Or we just remove the protection. And you're subject to prosecution when somebody does something on your site. Which is it? What do you want?
Yeah, and the easiest thing is just let people decide. Stop.
Yeah.
Stop. And I think their supposed good motives and the motives of many people in Congress are like, hey, you got to take a responsibility for what's on your site. You need to take responsibility. And they all went in front of Congress and said, you know what we do? This is on us. We need to do better. Mm-hmm. Not really.
No,
you really
no,
you don't need to do better. No, you don't need to. You don't really need to do it. People will click on the things they want to click on. Mm-hmm. People will like the things that they want to like. It's not your responsibility. Not your responsibility to manipulate what people believe, even if they believe dumb things or inaccurate things. Even in that circumstance,
mm-hmm.
when there's other crimes that are committed, like threats and child porn and stuff, yeah, that's your responsibility to get it off as soon as possible.
Yeah,
but that's different than speech. And you should just leave it up there. So what? Alex Jones wants to say something that's blatantly false over and over and over and over again. So what?
We figured it out all these years. Why can't we now?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like I believed in the 9/11 theories to begin with. So what's the big deal now? It's not like I really thought that the Sandy Hook tragedy was a false flag operation. I never believed that. You know, there might have been some people who did. But I think any normal human being knew that that was an actual event that occurred, and a real tragic one.
Yes, and I think we all could agree. One thing that Alex was right on is that everything starts at the Gulf of Tonkin. there's nothing that doesn't start there.
That's right.
That's where it all started.
Yeah. It is. That is where it all started.
The Gulf of Tonkin.
Exactly right. You could go back a little bit further to Rothschilds. If you wanted to, but
right.
you know, we won't go there.
I don't want to go to high level. Only that's Alex's job.
Right. All right. 888-727 Beck. Pat, Stu, and Jeffy for Glenn on the Glenn Beck program. Google needs to be careful. I don't know if you're aware of that. President told them yesterday that they need to be careful because what they're doing isn't fair to the American people. Now, he keeps threatening people with, I guess, censorship, or I don't know what the threat exactly is to Google here, but they better be careful. All of these warnings about speech are somewhat troubling to me. And
right. Well, he's just mad, you know, because the head of Google just told the Senate, some Senate committee, that no. I'm not coming to talk to you. They wanted him to come and talk to them, and he was like, no.
This is another,
coming to talk to you.
To me, somewhat an example of the type of story where you have to ask yourself the question, should we cover this?
Right.
Right? Should you cover, is it about a tweet? Well, then the answer is no.
Right.
Is it about something he said?
That's true.
Is it about something he said? Mm-hmm. The answer is no.
Because
is it about something he did? Then you have something there.
Mm-hmm.
If he starts saying, like, okay, we're passing this bill, we're trying to pass this bill, here's what we're... That is a legitimate thing to cover, but he just says stuff for the point of hearing his own voice.
Right.
It's just something that Donald Trump has done his entire life.
And this was at that soccer World Cup thing where Mexico, United States, and Canada is going to host the World Cup, like, in 2026 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were there at the Oval yesterday giving him presents, and he was joking around. You talk about him loving messing with the press. They gave him a referee wallet with a yellow card and a red card, and he pulled out the red card and joked around about throwing it to the press, you know, giving him the red card, kicking him out of the game.
Both sides love that.
Loving it.
Both sides love that.
That's when they asked him about Twitter. Oh, they better be careful. Right. I don't know. Should we cover it? He was just hearing himself talk.
It's like his way of saying, I don't like this one thing I saw. Is just to say, I might shut down Google. You know, I mean, like, that's just the way
he is.
That's
what I mean. The Senate committee is mad because the head of Google won't show up, and he knows that, so they're going to be careful.
Yeah. And it's not, like, you can certainly argue that that's not the right way for a presidency to operate. I think you can fairly argue it. But you also have to recognize what is occurring in the world, and you're going to drive yourself crazy if you panic every time mm-hmm. Donald Trump tweets something you don't like. He's going to do it probably, if you're in the media, he's probably yeah. doing it 5 times a day. And either you have to get past it and say, well, he's tweeted this sentiment 25 times and has done nothing about it. Maybe we just let this one go by until he starts doing something about it. And then at that point, I certainly have my support in opposing Donald Trump trying to regulate Google. He has nothing to do with that. Nothing to do with it at all. And he shouldn't
and you're right.
spend his time worrying about it either.
Yeah, he is Mr. Hyperbole. Right. He says outrageous things. And yeah, I think we know that by now. Donald Trump is going to continue to say and tweet outrageous things. And then, so like 90% of those things, you just don't worry about.
Yeah, O'Reilly
was a good rule of thumb.
O'Reilly was the first one that sort of talked about that with us when he said, just like, yeah, don't worry about it. He just tweeted it. And you start thinking about it when you live your life in that world where he says or tweets means anything. Yeah. It's a lot easier to understand. For example, Russia. If you ignore his tweets and what he says, he's pretty tough on Russia. Yeah. What he's done.
Yes.
It's a better way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.